It's exciting to be shooting a wedding, but at the same time, I feel like it's like a roller coaster where it's like you're going up that big, big hill, and before you drop down, it's like all the excitement and anticipation is building and it gets you so nervous. But at the same time, like you're so excited to have that thrill of the ride. That's kind of what kept me going. And I even remember at some point, especially early on, like you get so nervous before your shoot, you just like, you're almost like shaking. But then once you start the day, it like completely goes away and you're like, this is amazing. I can do this all over again.
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we are learning how to reveal the narrative in your photography. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
What is up, my photo friends? It is me, as always, your host, Raymond Hatfield. I am so excited to be here today. I'm excited that you are here today as well. You know, over the past few months, it's been interesting. Since starting the podcast, as you can imagine, when you do something for long enough and you continue to work at it, there is some growth. Growth happens. And, you know, more and more people start showing up. But it seems like, you know, after last year with the pandemic, the numbers, as far as downloads go, dropped off pretty substantially. And I can chalk that up to people not going to work, people not, you know, going to the gym and staying home. And kind of when you're at home, it's not as it's hard to find a spot while you're at home to be able to sit down and listen to podcasts uninterrupted. So I noticed that. But now it's really interesting because not only have the numbers rebounded back to obviously pre-pandemic, but more and more of you are starting to show up. So if you have started listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast here within the past, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months. Again, I just want to say thank you for showing up. And obviously, you have found something. Maybe it was because of the pandemic. Maybe you found this this newfound passion of yours, and you really want to make sure that you do it right, and you want to learn as much as you can so that you can create beautiful, compelling images. And I want to say that you are in the right spot. I am here to help you out as much as I can on your journey into photography. In fact, again, if you are new, maybe you haven't heard, maybe you haven't signed up yet, but I have a free ebook that I want to give you called Picture Perfect Camera Settings, which is a collection of images that I share, my own images that I put into an ebook in different scenarios, right? So like at a wedding, at a park, and just different scenarios that you might find yourself shooting in, whether it be indoors, outdoors, you know, good lighting, bad lighting, whatever it is. I share my images and show you my real world camera settings that I use to capture the image, along with kind of a paragraph or so about, you know, what settings are most important so that when you go out there and shoot for yourself, you can find those settings and then make adjustments from there. Because I don't just want to show you what settings I used. I want to give you the tools so that you can go out and do it for yourself. So if you want to go ahead and grab that, again, totally free, just head over to beginnerphotographypodcast.com. Then there's a little box right there on the homepage where you can go ahead and sign up for the email newsletter, and then you can grab your copy today. But seriously, it is, I mean, out of everything that I offer, I get a ton of feedback on that ebook specifically and how much, you know, listeners have found it to be helpful. So if that's what you're interested in, go ahead and grab it. I hope that you can find it valuable as well. So speaking of value, I want to give a huge shout out to a listener just like you who has given the podcast a 5-star iTunes review, and that is T. Pruitts. T. Pruitts, I believe that I said that right. T. Pruitts, again, left a 5-star iTunes review, said, "So helpful. Raymond does a fantastic job of presenting all types of photographers who offer real tips and tell interesting field stories. I also like how he separates out the business side and makes it an extra perk because I'm not really into this for the money. If I were, though, I would definitely pay for that price because you can tell it's real good stuff. Thanks, Raymond." T. Pruitts, thank you so much for leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. I cannot begin to tell you how important reviews are for a podcast like this one, a small podcast, one that isn't owned by a company, one that isn't just a form of marketing, you know, like these larger, huge, massive monster podcast parts of networks and things. This is just me. It's just me doing this on my own in the hopes that not only I learn something, you know, I love doing this, but also that I can share these conversations that you can learn something as well. And even, you know, as you said, for premium members, being able to learn lots of business related stuff as well. That is a huge thing. And real quick, I want to say that this is actually kind of embarrassing that I'm bringing this up, but now that I'm looking on iTunes, there's 189 five-star reviews. Oh my gosh, seriously, I cannot, that number like kind of blows my mind. I cannot believe that that you know, over the years that the podcast has done this, and it's all thanks to you. You know, I can't enter, well, actually, I take that back. I did enter my own review when we first got started just to see if it worked, but it does, and then the rest of them, they're all you. You took the time to, you know, take a moment for yourself out of the day and show your appreciation for the podcast by leaving a review. And to all 189 of you, I have to say thank you from the bottom of my heart, including you, T. Pruitts. 189 reviews. That's insane. This is going to sound crazy, but that number is like as large as it is, kind of has the OCD going crazy in my brain. Like, I want it to be either a 190 or a 200. So just, again, totally superficially here, if you're listening right now and you haven't left the podcast a five-star review, I take that back. If you're listening and you haven't left the podcast a review at all, no matter what star rating you think that the podcast is, I can't tell you how much I would appreciate it if you took just a few moments and left a review for the podcast with an iTunes or whatever podcast platform you are listening on, because again, it truly does help with the podcast. And as T. Pruitt said, this show is called the Beginner Photography Podcast because I want to give you, new photographers, the information that you need to start capturing better photos today. But if and when you decide that, you know, making money with your camera, earning money, starting a business is something that you want, there is a premium aspect of the podcast, which it takes away no information as far as photography goes for you, new photographers, but it's strictly business-based information. And if that's you, you're going to learn a ton in this week's episode because premium members get to learn, oh my gosh, first of all, exactly what today's guests, Gina and Angie, are doing to market their own wedding photography businesses to get in front of new brides today, like this week, like currently, as in right now, not old marketing tactics, but what's working for them today. They share an incredible SEO tip that I honestly never even thought of, which if you blog, you know how long it takes. It's going to save you hours. And it is going to help you rank higher in Google than you did before. So you're really going to love that tip. And Gina and Angie also share the importance of a mission statement. A mission statement is something that I never, you know, really thought that I needed. It always sounded like one of these big business type ideas. But Gina and Angie break down exactly what it is, why it's important, and not only that, but how it's going to make you more money. Yes, seriously. I'm sold. I was excited about that one. So if you want to become a premium member and hear the answers to not only these questions, but answers from past guests as well about some of their best business tips, then you can become a premium member by signing up at beginnerphotographypodcast.com and clicking the premium membership button at the top of the page. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into this week's interview with Gina and Angie. They're both Boston, Massachusetts-based wedding photographers who met in a photography community, got together, started talking one night and realized, oh my gosh, like they had this epiphany when it came to photography, which kind of revolves around the art of telling a story and why it's so important, how to do it, and all of the things that they wished that they knew when they first got started. So these are all the things that they're going to share in this week's episode, you know, all about creating the story, and not only, you know, not, I guess not creating the story, but creating a situation in which, you know, a story or a moment is going to happen, and then placing yourself there so that you ensure that you capture it. I mean, really important stuff that I I honestly had not put into my wedding day. I usually just take a step back. But after hearing some of the tips that Gina and Angie share in this one, I know I'm going to be putting this into practice. What is this? 250. This weekend at my upcoming wedding. So it's going to be fantastic. I'll let you know how that goes. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into this week's interview with Gina and Angie. You know, Gina, Angie, you've both been shooting weddings for combined more than 20 years. And today I know that we're going to talk about your early life in photography. That's really what I get excited about. And I know that's what listeners get excited about too. But before we get into not only how your friendship developed and how you two built businesses that are not only sustainable, but doing something that you know, truly enjoy, I really want to know how you both got interested in photography. I want to know about those earliest moments when you knew that photography really meant something to you and was going to play a big part in your life. So, Angie, I'll let you start. Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy to follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
Oh, this is such a tricky question for me because I didn't have a traditional start. So I'm essentially like a career switcher. I was in biotech. So I was doing like pharmaceuticals and molecular diagnostics and things like that. And I was in research, which is really fun and interesting, but it's very much like small, isolated. You're in a lab for long hours. Daylight is something that you see in the morning and sometimes at night. So I think what started it is I had done like a little boudoir pinup shoot with some friends. It was just like, girls, champagne, like get together. It was an excuse to sort of like put some makeup on and do this shoot. And when I looked at it after, I actually, I wasn't crazy about it because it was like the compositions were all off. And I was like, no, I could do this. I could do better.
Just to clarify, were you in front of the camera or behind the camera?
But in front of the camera.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So when I got the proofs back, I was like, this is just off. And it was actually that started it. And so it caused me to buy a camera and then just basically start from there. And I just kind of ran with it really quickly. And I would say like within a year of buying a camera, I essentially like opened up a business and started doing it full time, which was probably a little ambitious and crazy. And yeah.
Okay, so just so that I'm clear, you had a shoot for yourself that you wanted to get done. You got in front of the camera and you were, I don't want to say so unhappy with the photos, but you saw something in the photos that you weren't happy with, that you thought, I wanna give this a go and see what I can do with a camera in my hands. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. Cool. So then
I didn't know
okay.
That.
So I'll be honest. I think this is my first time interviewing two people at the same time. So bear with me while I try to formulate questions. I promise you, Gina, I'm not. We're going to get to you in a moment. But this is really interesting to me because where listeners are at right now might be in that exact same position. They just picked up that camera. They know that it can do something. They just don't know exactly how to make it capture what it is that they want. So when you first got that camera, what was your initial reaction after you started taking photos? Was it like, oh yeah, I got this, like I'm a pro? Or did you think, oh wait, I'm actually in much over my head than I was expecting?
Oh, I was definitely in over my head, and I booked my first wedding probably before I should have. But I YouTubed everything. So I like didn't even know how to use manual, but basically I read somewhere you should shoot in manual. So I was like, well, let me do that today. So I would say by the end of the week, I was like shooting in manual.
Wow.
And then basically like shooting whatever I could get in front of, paid or unpaid or whatever. It was just I dove in really fast, really hard.
Why did you think weddings, like, right off the bat? Is that what you were interested in, or was there something else?
No, actually, weddings kind of fell into my lap. So I reached out to some local photographers just to sort of ask them how they got into it or something like that. And one of them kind of took pity on me and was like, you know what, a girl from my high school, she actually just reached out and she's looking for a newbie starter. And so just let her know. So I did. I let her know I was available because I obviously had no work at that point. And I let her know she was going to be my first wedding. And I had started doing just like a little bit of boudoir shoots with like friends and things like that, like literally in my house or in their living rooms or whatever free available space I had. So at least that helped me in terms of like working with like composition, moving quickly with camera settings and things like that, and actually being able to like form light on the body. So I had some of that. And then I would say, like, in terms of like composition, something I didn't realize early on is my mom actually was, she's an elementary art school teacher, but she's actually had a strong influence in art my whole life. So I actually had a lot of that in the back that I didn't, like, in the back of my mind that I didn't realize I was using until later. But that's basically how I got started.
Oh, wow. Mostly like in the form of composition and lighting, is that how you would say that you had the most influence?
Yes, and I think fear that it was always going to fail. Wow. So it was like that anxiety, like that you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to... And I remember taking a photo, it was like a group shot of everybody, and I was like, I really hope this works. And I took a photo and I just checked it and I made sure. And then I took it, actually, I bracketed it because I was like, I need to make sure that I have it in different exposures to make sure it's coming out well. I knew the aperture was fine, but I felt like the exposure. And back then we didn't have these great, you know, saves for like highlights and shadows. So if you didn't nail it, it looked like crap.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that. Gina, what about you? Did you have a similar entrance into photography?
Really different, actually. I was about 12, I think, when I sort of got into photography. My mom was sort of very much an amateur photographer, like really into it, but never took off with it as a career. And she had like one of these Pentax manual cameras, and I remember her always being just really into taking the pictures rather than being in front of the camera. And she did a photography course when my older sister was pretty young, and she had like all these really cool like black and white photos of her. And I think at that point, like, because I was a little bit older and she could see that I was interested, she sort of taught me a thing or two about her manual camera. And this is like really old school manual, like you had to do it right. So much of the pictures that we got back, we would like bring in the film and we get them back and they'd be like totally blurry or white or black, you know, but I was figuring it out. And then I think I got to the point where I was like, could bring it with me. And I remember there was this moment when my friends, we were like, I don't know, playing in a creek or something, you know, and I remember instead of playing with them, I wanted to take pictures of them doing it. And, you know, I obviously hung out with my friends, but that was sort of the moment when I was like, wow, I really am into this. And my mom was super supportive. And she like let me take some art classes at this local art college. I'm from Michigan. There's this art college called Kendall, and went there for the summer a couple times and took art classes and photography specifically. And our high school didn't have a darkroom or anything. So that was like, luckily for her, she kind of like showed me that, you know, gave me the access to it, I suppose is how you could put it. And then I really ran with it. I went to art college, studied photography, and then I did my master's in documentary photography. So I was very much like, you know, trained traditionally, if you will, and always into it. So weddings similarly sort of fell in my lap when like a really good friend of mine from my master's program was asked to photograph her friend's wedding. And to be honest, I never even thought about weddings, because the way I always shot was very much from that, like, you know, I always thought I'd be more of like a photojournalist, but like couldn't really wrap my head around that because like I couldn't imagine like going to some of the places. Like I thought it'd be cool, but I was pretty scared, to be honest, like of being like a hardcore photojournalist. So like much of my work was like about subcultures and things like that, you know. And then a friend of mine was asked to do the friend's wedding, and she was an amazing photographer, but she had never shot a wedding and she didn't feel comfortable doing it on her own. So she asked me, And we were sort of given the license to photograph it how we wanted. And I was like, what? This is amazing. This is like the first time that you could just walk in and take a picture of everybody and doing anything. And it was totally cool. Like before that, much of my work was about getting that in and like feeling a little bit anxious and nervous that they were going to like get upset if I like, you know, wasn't sneaky enough, or I shouldn't say sneaky enough. It was all about building trust, but it, like being unobtrusive. And that really helped me with wedding photography very much. But having that in and having that like ability to photograph all these people and all these interactions, I was pretty much hooked. I was like, oh yes, I'm doing this. I'm not going to wait tables anymore. I'm going to do this, you know? And so that was sort of when it took off that like, wow, I can be an artist and make money off my craft and still like do my personal stuff. And so that was exciting. And since like, I really feel like, you know, I get my creative juices like flowing, and I honestly come back from a wedding like rejuvenated, because it's like that, you know, the social aspect, but also like the ability to just take all these pictures is good. So
As somebody who went to film school, I know that waiting tables is a very popular profession amongst creatives. Yeah, absolutely,
because you feel like you're trying to do your art and you need to make money, and you end up, you know, and I, you know, I was working so much like waiting tables, like I barely had time to like go out and shoot. So when I started doing weddings, it was amazing how my technique like got so much better, that if I had gone back and done a project after doing like 20 weddings, that project would have been so much more solid, you know, because you go through all these different ebbs and flows of like lighting situations, like constraints of the room and all this stuff that really it's like a photographic workout, you know?
Yeah, very much so. I've never heard it explained that way, but a photographic workout shooting a wedding. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's like you just kind of have to do whatever you have to do to get the photo there. Yeah. So let's go back to when you were 12 and you get that camera in your hand and you start shooting. And as you said, you're getting photos back, pure black, pure white, maybe somewhere in between a little bit. Yeah, I got to be honest. I mean, you know, if I kept getting photos back like that, it could be a little bit discouraging. So what was it about photography that, I guess, made you push through those initial struggles?
Yeah. Well, I think there would always be at least one maybe that kind of turned out. And that was exciting. I honestly think that I feel very like fortunate that I was born when I was, I guess. It sounds nerdy, but like the fact that I learned on film and then now I get to like have digital, it's like this like nice best of both worlds, because I think it was sort of the magic of seeing what I was going to get really helped. It was like the waiting. And so we go to like the grocery store and like drop off the film, and I like had to wait, and then you would like go through all the pictures and you'd be like, oh, cool. And then each week or whatever, it seemed like, okay, now there was five that turned out, and I was kind of like learning, and I was kind of like one of these kids that was like, I want your help. And then she'd try to help me, like, no, like the way you're helping is annoying. So I'm going to figure it out, you know? So like, I'm sure she was.
That's my daughter. You just perfectly explained my daughter right there.
Right. Yeah. My kids are like that too. So I think it was very much like, okay, you're going to get your all black pictures then until you figure it out. And so it was kind of like the sort of stubbornness too of figuring it out too maybe drove me a little bit, to be quite honest. But the magic of getting those pictures back was really cool. And then when I was actually in the dark room, like that was just like, what, this is so cool, you know? And then as you learn, you progress, and so then you get a little bit more what's the word, I don't know, they get you pull it off more and more, so then you get more into it.
So Angie, you know, with you having gone into, was it biotech, is that right?
Yeah, essentially.
So going into biotech and then getting into photography much later, after having, you know, a quote-unquote career, did you started on digital, is that right?
Yeah, I tried film for like 1 week and I never developed it. And I
do you still have that role? It has to be around somewhere, right? Did you ever get it developed?
No, I didn't. But my dad has that camera. It's like his old Minolta, which like everyone and their mother had back in the 80s. So I have it, and I actually have been thinking to try it again in my free time that I have lots of.
You're gonna enjoy it. It is, I mean, like Gina was saying, like there is a bit of magic to it, but with you not having gone through that side of it, I'm interested to hear from you as well. You know, when you first picked up that camera and you realized, oh, this isn't as easy as I thought that it was going to be, what was it that kept you going in photography?
One of my moments that I realized this is complicated is, so right before I shot my first wedding that I booked, I had second shot for free for someone. So basically I had another photographer. So thankfully, like when I first got, and I don't necessarily recommend that my path was the best way to get here. But it was a path. And, so another photographer took a little bit of pity on me and, had me come along, and I volunteered to second shoot for her. And I realized, shutter makes a big difference for indoor photos. So that was a big wake up call right before that happened, right before I had my own wedding. And so thankfully I had that. Otherwise that first wedding I shot might not have turned out so well. And I think it was, I feel like for a lot of me, it was a little bit of, it's exciting and, to be shooting a wedding, but at the same time, there is still like, there is a little bit of fear. I feel like it's like a roller coaster where it's like you're going up that big, big hill, and before you drop down, it's like all the excitement and anticipation is building and it gets you so nervous. But at the same time, like you're so excited to have that thrill of the ride at the same time. Like that's what I would sort of explain it as. And that's kind of what kept me going. And I even remember at some point, especially early on, like you get so nervous before your shoot, you just like, not that you want to like vomit, but you're just like, you're almost like shaking. But then once you start the day, it like completely goes away and you're like, this is amazing. I can do this all over again. So I felt like that was kind of my thrill jive that I did for the first few. I mean, it still kind of happens, but thankfully I have better control over that now.
Hey, Raymond here. And we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, when I first got started in photography, one of my first sessions, I charged a family $75 for 10 images. Now, I had shot close to 150 images, though. So to let the client pick out the 10 that they wanted, I sent them all 150 with a Google Drive link. I mean, the photos were low res, of course, because, well, who would want to steal 150 low res photos? Well, just as you would expect, they screenshot more than 50 of their favorite images, unedited, of course, and then posted them to Facebook. While I was mortified and upset, this was 100% my fault. I should have used CloudSpot to send their photo gallery. CloudSpot will watermark my images, limit downloads, and even let me sell images to those clients who decided that 10 photos actually wasn't enough. And you can sign up today and get started for free by heading over to deliverphotos.com to learn more about CloudSpot and sign up. Don't lose out on another dollar. Now, back to today's interview. That's funny. I've explained shooting weddings in that exact same way, is that, I mean, still after hundreds of weddings, I still show up and, you know, I always try to get there early to account for traffic or whatever. And I typically get there like 20 minutes before I'm supposed to walk in the door. So I'll just sit in my car, and that whole time it's just bubbling up inside of you. And, you know, you get to play in that what if game. Like, what if, you know, today doesn't go well? Or, you know, what if the bride's in a bad mood, which happens sometimes, you know? But as you said, once you walk in those doors and you're like, hey, I'm here, it all goes away. And it's infectious. And addicting for sure. So I love to hear that you have that exact same take. That's great. So over the years, you know, you've I'd love to know more about the progression that you two have made up until this point, because as we all know, the first wedding looks nothing like a wedding that you would shoot today, you know? So tell me about what specifically, like name one thing. I'll start with you, Angie. What's one thing that has changed most in your photography from thinking about that first wedding to what you do today? What has changed most in your the way that you shoot or your photography business?
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
So they're almost one in the same. So I think when I got started, I thought it was really about like posing and portraits. I thought it was just really all about portraits, really.
That's what Pinterest tells us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like wedding details, like bouquets and things like that, which of course are very nice and, florists do a lovely job on them. But in the end, it's the union of two people coming together. And so it's the celebration of their love, their connection, their friends and family. And I think I had a conversation with my a mentor I had actually when I first got started. And I was like, no, the shoes, you need to have great details and great lighting and like take your time with that. And I think I did it partly because I was good at it and you could take your time and you got those shots together. But the images that the clients were printing and that they said they loved and the ones that made it into the album were always the moments. And then it even solidified more in my own wedding because I found like my portraits were beautiful, but if I didn't have that connection, if I didn't have that feeling in them, I didn't love them as much. And so that sort of changed really the way that I was shooting and just like what I focused on more. And even like everyone, a lot of photographers complain about like, do you want to do a receiving line after the wedding? And I understand it could be like a million hugs, but I think like those hugs are kind of fantastic. Mm-hmm. So that's really where I just like tell clients now, like, take your time, like have these moments with friends and family, you know, get in there and, you know, let your guard down and just like be part of the moment. And I think that's just made the biggest difference in my photography.
Wow. So when you go to weddings, you're still shooting bouquets, you're still shooting details and whatnot. So is it now that you're just not spending as much time or worried about how perfect those turn out as you once did?
Exactly. Yeah. So I would say like it probably made up more like 20% of the gallery before in terms of like details. And now it's probably like 5. I mean, maybe not 20. The 20 is like probably a little excessive, but it doesn't take, I'll realize like maybe 3 wide room shots is good. You don't have to have it from every angle. You don't have to have like every single table setting, that sort of thing. Just, you know, one solid one looks good, is great. Client loves it. Perfect. Move on. Like go to the next thing. It's how do you want to allocate your time for the day?
Right. Yeah. It's not like it's a crime scene. Like you don't have to cover it from every angle of the room. It's not going to be used in court or anything like that. I don't know. I've never had a wedding photo used in court, but I'm sure now that I think about it, I'm sure that some of them have. That's really interesting. So what about you, Gina? Because I'd love to know if you have, you know, kind of that similar take, because all of our wedding businesses progress in one way or another in the beginning, but you came at it from a different angle, having started with photojournalism. So did you walk into that first wedding and you're like, I know exactly what I'm doing here. Moments mattered most. And then that's it. Did you even get any detail shots at your first wedding?
Well, that's what's so funny is because I knew how to do the moments and I knew how to, you know, document. But what I was really self-conscious of and really worried about was the group portraits and the portrait session and the details and all the things when you look up, you know, when you think of wedding photography, you know, before back then when it was more traditional, I was like self-conscious that I wouldn't be able to create like wedding photography images. So I was doing the same where making sure that I was, you know, figuring out how to pose people. And I really had to teach myself how to do that for the group portraits and for the couple portraits, and making sure, you know, I would look and like kind of imitate how other people were doing the bouquets and things. And I felt like if I didn't do that, I wasn't, you know, going to be a successful wedding photographer, which is so funny because if I could do it all again, I would not do that. And I would have, you know, obviously the group portraits are different. You know, you need to know how to do that. You need to make sure you get everybody well lit. But for the other parts of the day, I think if I would have stayed true to my approach, it would have been more successful, because over the years I realized, wait, don't do what other people are doing. Do it in your own way. And now I really feel like I tell my couples, you know, during your portrait session, I want this to be a time where the two of you have a moment alone and really just feel the day, whether it's before or after. And I really set them up to have an interaction with each other rather than a photo shoot in a portrait session. And that brings me back to like what I'm good at is like really, you know, documenting the moment and like really kind of getting a glimpse of that connection. And also for them, the experience is so much better. Most of the couples I work with, they don't like feeling like they're in front of the camera. They value photography, but they don't want to know that they're getting their photo taken. So, you know, I sort of like came in from that photojournalistic background, but felt like there was a huge deficit in my like wedding photography abilities. So I compensated for that and then sort of found my way again. Like, wait, no, do it in a way that works for you. And I think that was really important. It's, you know, like a journey maybe people have to go on. But I think if you can always sort of stay true to like how you see the world, or like you were saying earlier, and like that's true to you, then your images are going to be stronger. Because once you start to try to mimic what other people are doing, it's just never going to be as powerful.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, so obviously the power of story is very important to both of you here. And I know that you two recently built a course called Revealing the Narrative, which kind of goes into building those moments so that you can ensure that you capture those. Can you, I guess, before we get into the course, which I know that we're going to talk about later, can you tell me, like, where did this come from? Like, well, like, why is it that, let me see how I can formulate this question. Like, I would love to hear the importance of story. Like, why is it that story takes over perfection? Because with story, there's going to be imperfections. There's going to be blinks. There's, you know, there's going to be a person walking in the background, and it's not going to be perfect, but there is a moment there. So what is it about a moment? What is it about the story that you can build that is better than you as a photographer posing everything and ensuring that it's just like, you know, aces? Does that question make sense? Angie, absolutely. I'd love to start with you.
So I think when you orchestrate something, it's really hard to make it genuine. And when you allow something to unfold, you're not having to contrive it. So therefore, it's innately genuine. And I feel like the biggest thing is usually the emotional element, where you can have really beautiful photos that are well composed, well lit, well everything. But if you are missing that emotion, it's just falling a little bit flat. Mm. And so that's for me where it's like, I'd rather have a little chaos. I'd rather have a little bit of the ugly, like you would say, or like the not missing the perfection, so long as that emotional element is there, because that's what we all connect to. So for me, that's my biggest thing.
Okay. So then, Gina, I would love if you could share a practical way that somebody can do this, can create that moment. But like Angie was saying, like, let it unfold naturally at the same time, because I'm sure that somebody's mm-hmm. listening and thinking, how do you create something and let it unfold naturally at the same time? So what is something practical that listeners can do to try this for themselves?
Yeah. For me, it's all about setting whoever you're photographing up to be comfortable. If people can be themselves, then you're getting them in their true light. You're capturing them in their true light. And for me, that's a combination of things. It's setting them up to know that they can be themselves. So if you're doing an engagement session, for instance, it's about setting them up to be comfortable in an environment and doing what they're doing so that they can truly just like let go and do their thing, that they don't need or even want direction, because they're just being themselves and they know what to do and how to do it because they're used to it. And similarly, on a wedding day, you have so many different pieces going on. Let's take the getting ready, for instance. People are naturally getting ready. So you are there and very much being in the background, being unobtrusive, so that they know that whatever they're doing is just what they're supposed to be doing. And you're taking pictures of that. And when you come to the portrait session, that's when talking to your clients beforehand is super important, and talking to them about how that portrait session isn't about the photos. It's about them having alone time together and to really just like feel their day. And I always say that to couples, and then they know that they're not looking to me to know where to put their hands. They know that it's about the two of them having a moment. And it's really cool. Some people hug and start to cry. Other people talk about something funny that happened that morning, or just like chit chat. And you are there to like to guide them and make sure that they're feeling comfortable. And sometimes going for a walk is really helpful if people are feeling nervous. And it's good to have a few things up your sleeve. Like I always suggest a big hug. It helps people feel comfortable. But I remind them, like, this is just for you guys. You know, this is your time, and these images are just for you. And that little bit of like education and reassurance beforehand on the day goes a long way to be able to truly just document people being themselves. So that's something I always say to clients and hold true on the day, like have them be comfortable, have them be themselves. Then you're really documenting and not manufacturing. Because for me, photographs are all about reigniting memories. And so you want that photo, that like portrait session of them, to be a memory of how they felt in that moment, not like of a photo shoot where they can't wait to get back to their wedding, you know?
Right. Oh, absolutely. 100%. 100%. Which is so funny, because it's like, you know, I think back to, you know, my first solo wedding, and it was a friend of a friend, you know, and then my next, you know, probably 24 weddings, it was the same. It was a friend of a friend. And I thought, well, they just all want these Pinterest photos, right? That's kind of where everybody starts, because that's, honestly, it's a good place to get an idea, you know?
Yeah.
So they go out and they look there. But then very quickly, those friends of friends kind of started to dry up. Not as many were getting married. And I thought to myself, well, I guess now it's time to put on my big boy pants and like learn now the business side of photography and the business side of marketing. So I would love to hear from you both. Like, after shooting hundreds of weddings, what has been probably the most powerful form of marketing that you have found to bring in new brides? And then what are you doing today to get the word out to brides about your business? Angie, I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, I think it's a multi-step approach, essentially, which is a little bit difficult. I think I actually had a client contact me the other day, and they said something that I thought was like perfect. And it was, they didn't realize what they were looking for until they saw my portfolio. Wow. So I definitely think, yeah, which I was like, awesome. That's amazing. I love you. but I think once you have an idea of what you want your wedding photography to be about, then you really work on curating your portfolio, so that way it's communicating that message. But I think like in order to continue to like build that business, it's really a multi-step approach about like the good old fashioned like networking works really well, and I've done really well with that. I've definitely put a lot of time and effort in SEO. And I would say, like, you know, even having those Google reviews, I had someone last year book me because they said they read the Google reviews and they just wanted to work together. And I was like, amazing. That I'm not going to say no to that either. So I think you have to do a multi-step approach in order to make sure that you're getting business from different angles, so that way you're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
First of all, love that. That I mean, nothing I'm sure feels better than hearing somebody be like, I had no idea what I wanted, then I found you. Now, like, I'm not even gonna look anywhere else. So that's fantastic. With many of the premium listeners of the podcast, they are interested in, you know, turning photography into business. And one of the things that we actually talked about recently was reviews. So I'm glad that you brought this up, because some of the pushback that I'm getting is like, it feels weird to ask somebody to give me a review. Like, shouldn't somebody naturally want to do that? So I would love to hear how you handle that situation.
I think your happy clients, they want to give you reviews, but they don't necessarily think about it. They're not thinking about it as you as a business. They're thinking you as that photographer. And so I just like to give them like a gentle reminder. And so I basically built it into my workflow that X amount of weeks after the wedding, after they've had a chance to review everything and they love it, then I'll send them an email and be like, thank you so much. Reviews mean as much to me as they do for other potential clients. And if you could leave me a review, and I give a couple options of like where they could do that, clients would love to hear from you, or potential clients would love to hear from you. And that's actually worked really well. And sometimes after I'll send like a print as like a little thank you. But really, I think just asking, they're excited, they loved working with you, and they're happy to help you. So I think if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it. So you just got to go for it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But I'd love to go just a little bit deeper. When you say X amount of weeks later, are we talking 2-3 or like 8-9?
No, I think sooner the better. So I usually, about 3 weeks for me is pretty good. Sometimes two. If a client wrote back right away after their gallery and they loved it so much, I'll send it right away. I'll be like, here you go. Like, the only thing is you just, if they're off on their honeymoon or something, you want to make sure that you send it when they actually have time to write it. Mm-hmm. So maybe avoid that. But otherwise, like, I would say the sooner, because they're on that high still and they're still going through it. And I definitely will say, like, feel free to go through your gallery before you write that review.
Right. Okay. So 2-3 weeks after sending the gallery, that's going to be super easy to put into a workflow if you use anything like 17 Hats or Tave Sprout, you know, whatever it is, that'd be easy enough to do. Well, thank you. I love that. I love that. And Gina, I would love to know from you as well, like, because marketing is, when I ask premium members, like, well, what do you want to hear about? You know, like what questions can I ask? And it's always, how do I get more clients? What should I do for marketing? You know, which obviously they go hand in hand. So what have you found to be one of the best forms of marketing that has worked for you?
Yeah. So a couple things. My biggest tip would definitely be to get clear on your messaging. Like, you know, every word, every image should be really all about what you're about, so that you're attracting clients that are going to respond to that, and you're going to just be an automatic great fit. So right when they jump on your website, they know what you're about, and that either resonates with them or it doesn't. But when it does, that's really powerful. So standing out from, that's going to help you stand out from other photographers and really grow rapport with your clients like immediately. So all they want to do is get on the phone with you and make sure that the two of you can have a conversation, and then they're ready to go. And the other big thing that might sound really old school, but blogging is huge. Blogging is huge because people are going to like pop in their venue online. And if they see your photos at the venue where they're getting ready and they like those, that's massive. So for me, like, I would say blogging was my go-to once I started to be pretty hardcore about my blog. My SEO got really good and people were just sort of finding me on Google. So that's what I would recommend.
Okay, so I got two questions here for you. We'll start with the first because that just makes the most sense. Blogging is, again, one of those things that new photographers in business know nothing about. So when you say blogging about everything, many premium members tell me, like, how many times can you write, you know, John and Mary's wedding day was so perfect, the weather was great, everybody had a good day, you know? So, like, are there other things that we should be writing about, and how do we make sure that those blogs stand out?
Yeah. Well, for me, like the writing was such a hurdle. Like, you know, I felt like I could throw together my, you know, 30, 40 images. I probably have too many images, to be honest. That's always a problem for me. Throwing together that story of the day, and then like, you know, I could like have the keywords, but actually writing about the day was tricky, and it still is. One big tip I try to do is kind of, you know, a good rule of thumb is like, you know, say something about the couple, say something about the day, talk about your favorite part, just to get your kind of 300 words in. But one thing I like to do is, speaking of reviews, kind of piggybacking off that, is once the couple replies to the gallery and they like it, I'll ask them for a review too. And I'll either take the review, or I'll take that email back, that like enthusiastic email, and I'll stick that at the bottom of the blog post. Now you're getting more words in, but you're also getting like a great testimonial at the end. So, you know, potential client goes, they like see the images at their venue, and then they hear a great testimonial. It's very powerful. But I honestly think like if writing is a hurdle for you, it's not going to be attractive to want to like write every day. But I started to do like just like a really simple, I wouldn't even call it a journal. I would just like write something every day for like 5 minutes. And it made those blog posts so much easier to get to that 300 mark in a way that sounded, you know, because you want it to be in your voice. You know, you want your viewers to really feel like they're listening to you and not just like how you said, like a template where you're just like putting in different names and venues, you know. So trying to get that authenticity in your writing is really important too. Yeah.
So then when it comes to the, you know, you mentioned the keywords there. Are your keywords just simply like your location, wedding photographer? Is it the venue? Like, is there anything else to that?
So you have these like, you know, these whale keywords, right? And then there's like these snail keywords, and there's probably like a million different ways of describing that. But you're like, my like big whale keyword is Boston wedding photographer. And then I have these little snails keywords, like let's say fall Willowdale state wedding, you know? And obviously the little snail ones are going to attract less people, but when they attract people, it's that much more powerful. You know, you're not competing over it as much for one, but also that client is really looking specifically for that. So yeah, SEO is an art form to figure out, in my opinion. SEO really helps. It's once you figure it out, it takes a bit of time, but it's, I don't think SEO will ever grow old because people are always, well, I shouldn't say people will always be Googling things, but I feel like they will.
Yeah. I have a feeling that Google isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Anytime soon. Yeah.
Angie, you mentioned earlier that SEO was a big part of your marketing strategy as well. Do you take a very similar approach, or is there anything else that you do maybe outside of blogging for SEO that has helped you?
Yes, I had an idea that I wanted to add on to Gina's though is, so yes, I try to blog a lot, and, that has helped a ton in terms of like, definitely if someone has been at the venue before, then, they do Google that, the images come up. And so, yeah, I would say a good mixture for SEO is like sort of the location, description of like the couple, or, you know, summer wedding at vet, and then mention the venue, things like that. And variations of things like that is really what helps, your rankings for when someone's Googling those terms. And what I find is if you're having trouble blogging, my big tip is feel free to ask the couple. So like I ask the couple a few questions and then they write back. If you can do it, you know, close to the wedding, I think you get pretty great responses. Sometimes if you don't want to feel stuck about waiting for the client to respond to your questions, another tip would be right when you finish that wedding that night, spend like 15 minutes in your car before you go home and just like jot down a few thoughts that you had before you leave. And another thing that I have done before that I thought was helpful, I've had some clients that have like these tremendous speeches, like their best friend just says this wonderful, wonderful speech. And so like, I've asked for parts of those speeches because I'm like, yep, that's great material. And it was amazing. So, I definitely don't mind doing stuff like that, whatever makes that job easier. And then what was the other questions about SEO?
It was, I guess, first of all, thank you. That's a wonderful tip that I know is going to help a lot of people. It's maybe outside of blogging. Is there anything that you do possibly like to your main website or the other pages that you found beneficial, or is blogging the main pillar for you?
No, I think like when you're looking at your SEO, like every time you're uploading an image, you want to be like, even for your main website, for any of the pages, like you want to be labeling those images that are helpful for the SEO that you want to be delivering. And then you're sort of like littering your site with the keywords that you want to be found with. So like Gina was saying, like sometimes those whale ones are difficult to compete with. So let's say Boston wedding photographer, or let's say wedding photographer is hard to compete with, but Boston wedding photographer is a little bit easier. And then you could add a few adjectives in there, like, you know, moment driven Boston wedding photographer, and it just kind of helps the funnel down to you a little bit more. And then that also helps you when someone is looking for, let's say even like candid Boston wedding photographer, like that will probably, you'll probably rank a lot higher than you might under just like local or under just wedding photographer.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got you. That makes sense. So, yeah. Let's see. Gina, I want to get back to you because mm-hmm. I just remembered. I told you my brain doesn't work too well. So when something pops in, I remember mm-hmm. it right away. You had said something earlier about your answer when it comes to marketing, and you talked about messaging and the importance of messaging and making sure that the words on your website are clear and that somebody reads it and they think, that's me. I would love for you to, because I went looking through some of the course material for your course, and there was a section on building a mission statement. So I would love to hear, like, the importance of a mission statement, because I don't have one. At least I haven't formulated one into like a single, you know, cohesive statement. But from a business and even a revenue standpoint, what will a mission statement do to help our businesses grow and essentially make more money?
Yeah. So when you have a mission statement, what you're doing is you're ensuring that like every image and every word is really clear. And you can look, so my mission statement is very much about, you know, capturing people as they are and capturing the emotions and the interactions and making sure like the images are full of life, right? So when I'm going through my portfolio or going through a blog or putting something on social media, I'm making sure that the images speak to that. If there is a beautiful portrait, but it looks composed, I don't put it in. And that sometimes is hard to do, but that's what's going to make it stand out. I don't put in a detail, like a decor detail shot, unless if it's somehow telling a story. So for me, like, it's sort of about living or dying by your mission statement, because then what you'll have is you'll have that moment when people go to it that like Angie's client said, we didn't know what we want until we saw it. You don't look like every single other photographer. You look unique. And what's going to make your work look unique is if it's sort of true to something that you feel strongly about, you know, and there's no right or wrong about it. You know, your work could, for me, my mission statement, this has to be correct for my work, and someone else's mission statement might be completely different and it has to look right for their mission statement. Does that make sense? So I think really spending the time to think about, what do you want to do for your clients? Like that, answering that question, like, what are you going to provide for them and how is that different is huge. And mission statements can look like anything. I mean, it could be three words. It could be a couple sentences long, but it's really about defining that and then looking at that whenever you're writing anything or wherever you're posting anything, because you want to stay true to that. Like having that cohesive message is really important. Is that helpful?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that now listeners and myself included would love to know, do you know your mission statement? Like off the top of your head, would you be willing to share that? Cause you know, you said three words and I guess maybe I do, like maybe I do have something. But I would love to hear like an example that you have written. Do you have yours?
Yeah. Mine is, like capturing authentic moments for client. Like I think it's for couples and families that allow them to go back and relive that moment. Like that's my mission statement. So it's pretty broad, right? But
at the same time, if I read that and that's not what I wanted, I would know right away, regardless of how great your photos are, you're either the right or not the right wedding photographer for me. So that does give me a good example. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't post my mission statement, but I make sure that my, like how I talk about my work and the work I show is in line with that. So, you know, my website very much talks about like, I want you to be yourself and be comfortable. And I'm very much in the background. And so someone, like I've had conversations with people that might have found me through Boston Wedding Photographer, and they're very much clearly looking for someone that's going to really hold their hand and give them a lot of like posing tips, and that's what makes them feel comfortable, and that's awesome, and they're just not the right fit for me, and that's like really good to know that for me and for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then because... I'm getting. Right.
Sorry, go on. I get really excited.
No. Yeah. And then you're getting clients that when you have that conversation about, I want, you know, it's all about you being yourselves, then they're just, then that's that great fit. So where during the portrait session, I truly am documenting them because that's exactly what they wanted. And it's this beautiful little blend. And so it works because you put it out there, what you do, they like it. And so it just works. Does that make right. sense? And believe me, in the beginning, I had a lot of like, why are they hiring me? I don't like, or I would get like a shot list of like, or a Pinterest board. And I was like, okay. And then, you know, over time I really had to like hone in on that messaging, and it could be nerve wracking to do when you're starting, cause you feel like you're giving yourself less potential clients. But it, when I made that like hardcore switch and like really like narrowed down my portfolio and was like really nervous about it, it made a huge difference. And I was like, I was actually getting more weddings because it actually resonated with people rather than feeling more like everybody else.
Yeah. And I've said, you know, to many, many clients on the phone, it's like, you know, having a phone conversation is not only an interview for them to find out if I'm going to be the right wedding photographer for them, but also for me. Because if I find out that I can't deliver what it is that they're looking for, then I'm just simply doing a disservice to them. And I wouldn't want that. Like, I don't care how much money it is. Like, if you're not going to be happy with these photos, I don't want to do it. Like, I don't want to photograph your wedding or anything like that. Angie, absolutely. Have you found similar success when it comes to having a mission statement?
Yes. And I would say it by sort of what I said earlier, which is like when someone came in, they're like, oh, I didn't know what I was looking for until I saw your stuff. And so it's ironic too, because like currently I'm going through my portfolio again to sort of curate it and bring in the past couple years worth of work as well. And where am I going with this? Sorry, my brain is like needs a second shot of espresso right about now.
It goes everywhere. I get it. Like when you do these things, you're just thinking about all this stuff. You're remembering mm-hmm. what Gina said, and then you're thinking about me. So yeah,
I get it. I had like 8 thoughts when Gina was talking, and I was like, remember it. And then I was thinking of you, and I was
That's
like,
why you gotta have the pen in the book. Yeah. Exactly.
I think when it comes to organization, we're probably a little bit similar of the B-type personality. Okay, ask the question one more time, and I promise I'll have a good answer.
if you found the similar success when it comes to having your own mission statement.
I think what it comes down to is when you create that mission statement. So I had one unknowingly for a long time, and it was just in the curation of images and really sort of the language I started using on my website. I found like the more caring and comforting you can be, like the more and the more I showed images where couples were being emotional. And what I mean by that, too, is it's not always like pretty crying. It could be ugly crying. But if it's like if it pulled at your heartstrings, then like that was a good image to put on there. And I felt like when clients saw that, they're like, oh, yeah, I want that, too. Or like, that'll be my mom, like bawling her eyes out during that toast. So I felt like they could connect with it better. And then it just made the experience for me easier. So essentially that kind of went into, you know, your whole marketing strategy, having a clear, concise communication to the client. So like if you're showing images where people are ugly crying, then you're telling them like, if you're ugly crying, I'm putting that on there. And so it's good because if the client wants that, they're connecting with you. And if they don't want that, they are going to the next web page. I feel like all the way around it is helped me with my client, and it's helped them have a better experience and also like sort of setting expectation for them as well.
Yeah, I think that you know you're absolutely right. If you truly want to have a successful business, one thing that I have found, kind of like you're saying there, is that you got to find the people that you have no relationship with, that you're not going to get along with, because those are arguably more important to find and weed out than those who are going to be a perfect fit for your business. You know, mm-hmm. who knows? We've all seen how one bad review can just destroy somebody. And oftentimes, you know, I can't speak for every occasion, but I'd be willing to bet that more than one are based off just, you know, choosing the wrong client or choosing to do a shoot or a wedding because, well, hey, you know, it's a few $100. Like I can do that this week and that'd be fantastic. Being miserable the whole time and then, yeah, finding that out at the end. So, I mean, thank you so much for, you know, both of you two for sharing that. And I think that when it comes to finding that messaging, that's really going to help a lot of photographers to, again, not only find the right clients, but find those who are not the right fit for them. So again, yeah. Thank you so much. Now, when it comes to photography, I find, especially weddings, you know, I find that one of the biggest worries that I hear from new photographers, you know, when they're just getting started shooting weddings, is that they're terrified that they're going to miss a moment, right? That they're going to miss that special moment. So with you two so deep into storytelling and moment, I would love to hear your perspective on this fear, specifically for new photographers.
Yeah.
I guess, Gina, I'll let you go first.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So with everything, like being able to catch any moment comes with practice, right? So if that is a big like anxiety and fear for you, which is absolutely 100% normal, I would really encourage you to go out and try to catch moments, like start a personal project, start photographing. If you have kids, they're perfect subject matter. Animals also work well because they just do their own thing. And that's really helpful. But even going out and doing some street photography where you're practicing the art of anticipation is huge for being able to capture moments. You're in front of a storefront that kind of like, I don't know, maybe is attractive to you for some reason, and you want to get someone coming by. That is the perfect practice for like waiting until that moment, being ready for that moment and executing on it. And, you know, I would advise you to not only practice before the wedding, but on the wedding day itself, really give yourself permission to shoot as much as you want. Me and Angie talk about this in our course, this idea of overshooting as like being bad, bad, bad. And I truly feel like it is better to overshoot, look at your work, see what that looks like, and learn from there. And when I say overshoot, I don't mean holding on the shutter constantly and like not even know what you're doing. But when you feel like a moment's going to happen, take a multitude of it. And look back, like when you look back at like the great street photographers, they usually use like a whole contact sheet, which would be like 36 images possibly for like that one awesome picture. So give yourself the permission to know that it's when you're doing moments and they're anticipating you know, you're going to want to take a few to get the one, you know, I would say at least three, you know, kind of thing. But having the ability to observe around the room and kind of look for those sideline moments and look for those big moments and get the idea out of your head that like there's only a few big moments on the wedding day of like the aisle and the kiss and, you know, and practice. But you over time, you will like know the timing of the aisle. Do you guys agree with me? Like, absolutely. You'll know like, okay, right now I'm here and in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm going to back up and I'm going to get them high. Like you just will learn. But when you're starting out, give yourself the permission to not always take the safe shot is what I would recommend because not
always take the safe shot. I like,
right. That. Because you're going to feel like more excited about your images, which is huge. And also you're going to produce better work. And you were kind of giving yourself that photographic workout of like, learning how to do it. But yeah, we talk about this a lot in the course, this idea of like anxiety and self-doubt. And for me, like the one thing that helps that is taking action to alleviate that. So if you're nervous about it, start practicing, like going out and try to grab those moments and before the wedding, just so you can say to yourself, hey, I've practiced, I'm ready, I got this. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
Is that
right.
Helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to ask Angie, you the same question. Have you ever missed a moment at a wedding? I'm going to start with you, Gina, and then I'm going to ask Annie. Yeah. Sorry, I should definitely do a better job at directing this.
I would say, of course. And I would say, I would feel very confident saying if someone told you they never did, they probably are not aware that they missed it or lying.
Right, right.
Because
right.
It is impossible not to miss something. You know, yeah. What I mean? Mm-hmm. I think I I'm almost too hyperly aware in my life. And so it helps me as photographer, as a photographer. But like, of course you miss something. Like, you know, you could be, you're human. And I remember like drinking like a glass of water once and be like, you know,
I wish I got that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it happens, you know, yeah. But I think it's like, you know, it's like your batting average, right? Like how much are you missing and how much are you getting? And like when you miss one, let it go. Get the next one. It's okay. All right.
Don't
let it affect you.
Yeah. Angie, I don't think that we can add anything more to that perhaps. So I'm going to ask you, because I mean, I'm right there with you. I know that I miss moments all the time. But as somebody who is so wrapped up in this world and ensuring essentially like your business, you know, you have to make sure that you're able to capture those moments. How do you ensure, Angie, that you put yourself in the right place at the right time to get them?
So the easy answer to that is experience, where you know sort of like the flow of a day, and you are anticipating how things are going to happen, or even just like behavior. So like, you know, sometimes those transition moments are really great, like bride leaving, going to the venue, that sort of thing. Like that's the easy stuff that's sort of waiting there. Or there's points of the day where you know there tend to be more emotional moments, such as like before the bride walks down the aisle or during the speeches, you know, making sure to pay attention to the parents as well, especially if like the person speaking is related to the bride and groom or the parent. And there was a couple points though that I thought I kind of want to add on to Gina's just a tiny bit. And so honestly, like I miss when I found I'm missing like some of these smaller moments, it's because I'm paying attention to timeline too much, where I'm like, okay, we got to like get to the next point. And instead of like just waiting to let things happen, I'm like, you know, trying to get my gear to go to the next one. And that's when I tend to miss it. And it's usually like right before we have a transition that some of these small moments start developing. You know, like when the bride's fully ready and she's about ready to like walk out of the room, if you're sitting there like playing with your gear and trying to get it like all wrapped up to go, half the time that's when the mom is like, oh my God, you're so beautiful. And like, you know, starts losing it. So it's hard. So I got an assistant. She deals with that. And that was sort of a way that I helped to not have to do that anymore. But the other thing too about just these moments is you want to put yourself in there. And I feel like when you first get started, you're nervous about where to be and how to be. And I think the biggest thing is like, you talk to the client, actually. The way that you get them to be comfortable is you just talk to them. Like when you arrive, say hello, make yourself known, and then just give them the space to be themselves. But don't feel bad about like walking through the scene sometimes, getting in there, getting close. And that's how I feel like that's how you can create some really beautiful art. And the client starts to realize like you just kind of start to be background noise, where like they're comfortable with you being there, but they're not paying attention to everything that you're doing. And I feel like, yeah, insert yourself into that moment sometimes. And that's really helpful.
Insert yourself into that moment. So let me try to build something here. So if, let's say, you know, dress just gets put on, mom obviously helped, maybe mother of the groom comes in, right? Wasn't a part of putting on the dress, but now she comes in, sees her future daughter-in-law for the first time. They go in for a big hug. Maybe everybody gathers around. Now mom's given a big hug, and maybe there's even a bridesmaid or something in there. Are you like getting in there like it's a huddle, like for, you know, football or something? Or do you think to yourself, wow, this is really special, I'm going to stand back and go with a longer lens on this?
I'm not a huge fan of long lenses, to be honest, because I feel like you're not close enough. There's a photographer quote that like, if you can't feel it, you weren't close enough. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times what I would start doing is like, depending on where I was when this happened, like this entry, I might start with my like 35 and do wide, and then just start walking in closer, like shooting the whole time. And I have no problem like, you know, using their hug to like fill that whole frame. But obviously like you have to kind of like read what's happening, but that's what I mean to be saying is like, don't feel bad about, you know, getting, you know, filling the frame with the emotion that's happening. I would say most of us, honestly, we don't have great large getting ready rooms. So you're kind of on top of them anyways. So like, use it.
Right, right. And it's not like, I mean, the couple understands that, like, they hired you to take photos. So, again, I think that's probably something else that I hear a lot from new photographers. It's like, well, I kind of don't want to intrude. It's like, well, you were kind of paid to intrude. So, like, just go ahead and do it, you know, if you can get closer. Gina, is it the same for you? I know that, you know, obviously lens choice is a bit of a personal preference. But would you take the same approach or would you go for that longer lens?
No, I would take the same approach. I think it's very hard to make yourself invisible. So instead of making yourself invisible, allow everybody to be comfortable with you taking the pictures. And then, like, as Angie said, they're forgetting about the camera. You know, you're not going to be able to document the day properly if you're worried about someone seeing you do it. You know, it's more about letting them forget about the camera and trust you taking those images and not interfering. So you can be there. And you can be close, but you cannot interfere. Like, I kind of have this philosophy that, you know, those first 10 minutes you're there is all about building trust and easing people into it. And there, in that first 10 minutes, if I miss a moment, I'm okay with that because it's about building that trust to last for the entire day. Does that make sense? If you, like, come in and you're probably not going to offend the bride or the groom. They hired you. They already have a relationship with you, but you don't want to scare the mother. Like, ease her into it. You don't want her hiding from you all day or, like, not being herself around you. So just having that, like, eased in approach, you can trust me, the camera is no big deal, that's going to, like, pay off so much, you know, throughout the day. And so that, you know, and, like, this idea of anticipating, like how Angie said, forget about the timeline. You do what the bride, like, follow the bride. Okay. Like, you know, like, just do it, just document her, what she's doing, or the groom, or the couple, I should say, you know, because if you get hung up on, like, wait, where do they need to be right now? What about the bouquets? Like, that's gonna like allow you to miss shots because you're not just sort of focusing on what you're doing. And sometimes I think overthinking the shot can allow you to miss the moment too. So just really kind of try to be intuitive and be like, my whole job is to document this right now. And you're going to have a lot better chance of getting everything you want to get.
I got to say, you know, to both of you, this has been a fantastic chat. I've really enjoyed talking to you two about, you know, obviously the important moment. That is something that I try to stress as well. But with you two being able to come on and break down not only a lot of, like, actionable ways into capturing a moment, but also, like, creating the space for a moment to happen has been extremely helpful, not only for me, but I know the listeners as well. And I'm sure that this is kind of why you two built your course, Revealing the Narrative. So I would love to hear how the course came about, and I'd love to know a little bit more about it as well. Angie, why don't you tell me how did this all come together?
So me and Gina started to become photography friends. And essentially, I think it's even up on our website. But basically, we just started talking about how independently our businesses actually didn't do well until we really started focusing on being more moment driven. And that's really what helped set us apart. So we realized that independently we did this, and we both also had the pressure when we got started that we had to be producing these really, like, cookie cutter images, like your Pinterest. Your happy Pinterest board that everybody loves. And I think, like, once we realized, like, we didn't have to conform, it was a lot easier. And then that's what we wanted other people to realize is, like, you do not, I understand, like, portraits sell, they're easy. It's a great thing. Like, you can do that. You can do all the details. But I think when you get to the heart of what's important in the day, like, you have a better connection with the client. And so we wanted people to realize, like, this is possible. And this will probably actually create you a better business, better art, and more happiness in the end.
I love it. So Gina, tell me what's in the course. Like, what is it specifically that you're teaching to these new wedding photographers?
Yeah, so the course is made up of 9 modules, and they focus on three different sections, really. One is the photography, one is the client connection, and the last is the business. So we're really getting into, you know, how to take the images that really allow you to tell that story, dig deeper, get those really authentic moments, and, you know, and how to feel really excited and creatively fulfilled when you go to a wedding, you know? Then we're talking about, you know, how to create like a great client experience. So we're getting into everything from your workflow to how to price yourself right, how to just like really build that connection so they're excited to work with you so that your inquiries turn into booking. Then we get into marketing and sales, which are very important, you know? And when we say sales, we, you know, don't mean these like, you know, sales calls, but instead like how to get people excited so that they're buying from you, and how they're going to buy albums and other things that are really going to increase your revenue, but also give them the service that they deserve, you know? And then we go into, you know, this self-confidence and like self-doubt that we can all struggle with, and how that is, we just thought it was perfect for the business portion, because that is something that every single person that we know of anyway, like overcomes, and sort of letting you know that it's normal, and also giving you tips on like how to overcome that so you can really reach your goals without feeling anxious about it, and definitely without giving up, you know?
Oh my goodness. That sounds kind of like an all-in-one type thing. That's great. Is this only for new photographers? Is this only for experienced photographers? And Angie, where can we find it?
So basically it's online. It's revealingthenarrative.com. And it is for, hands down, I think anyone that's in the first 1 to 3 years, this is instrumental in like really getting your business going. I think if I would have done this, I would have saved a lot of aggravation and anxiety. But also I feel like for a lot of photographers who are producing the art and they're not loving what they're producing, as well as they're not having clients that they're really connecting with, I feel like if they're starting to get burnt out, things like that, this is about how to refocus, how to redo that business so that way you are connecting with your clients and producing artwork that you really love at the same time.
One of the reasons why I truly love hosting the Beginner Photography Podcast, and one of the reasons why I started it, to be honest with you, is so that I could talk to other photographers and get their point of view on photography and why they shoot the way that they shoot, how they shoot, and just how they see the world. And after talking with Gina and Angie here today, I mean, my biggest takeaway from this interview was just simply that while there are, you know, there's a million wedding photographers, you really can separate yourself, not only in the way that you shoot, but in the way that you make your clients feel as well, in that client experience. Because if you are able, I mean, like I believe it was Gina who said, like, it doesn't really matter how great your image is. If your couple simply remembers the photo shoot of their wedding day, that's kind of a disservice to them, and it doesn't do justice to your photography. You want them to have the best wedding day that they can, and then you are simply there to document and capture it. And that is their take on it. And it's a take that, you know, I share as well. And I just love that philosophy. You know, while there are photographers who do go the extra mile and just make sure that everything is just picture perfect, magazine quality, there's nothing wrong with that. That is something that I admire a lot, but I just simply, that's not my zone of genius, I guess you could say. And I'm going to leave that to them, and I'm going to focus on Moment with Gina and Angie, because that's just how I kind of see the world. So again, while there are millions of wedding photographers, I don't know if there's millions of wedding photographers, while there's a lot of wedding photographers, you can separate yourself in what you do, how you do it, and most importantly, why you do it as well. So huge, huge, huge takeaway from this episode. I would love to hear your biggest takeaway. Come on and join the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community. Join and share yours. I'm sure that Gina and Angie would love to hear as well, because ultimately it's all about, you know, sharing what it is that you know to help kind of that next incoming generation of photographers. That's kind of always in a revolving door. I'm sure that there's a better analogy, but helping those who are coming after you so that they can be the best that they can. That's what it's all about here. So that is it for this week. Until next week, I want you to get out. I want you to shoot. I really want you to stay safe. And that's it. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.